I was in here from home, and I'll die in here again.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our weekly Medical Tuesday broadcast brought to you by our colonel, your host, Kimberly Purvis. Now, if you just tuning into us, make sure you check out our Defender 7 National Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Before you click on that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. We're more than just a group. We consider ourselves a one big extended family, and we treat each other as such. Your opinions are always welcome. Everybody has one, and we welcome them all. We also have a website. Type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small eyes.com. On our site, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100%, yes, all 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities in a time of need. So by all means, purchase something or hit that donate button. If you and your community in a time of need or a hits the fan situation, that's the only way that we're able to do what we do. We have a YouTube channel. Hop over there and do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. We're on MeWe. Click on organizations or communities and scroll down to Defenders 7 American Humanitarian Patriot Group. Yes, we are not a militia. We are an American Humanitarian LLC nonprofit organization. Now, for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy when you call in and interact with us. And that number to call is area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call to participate, area code 914-205-5773. And if you're too nervous to talk on the radio, we also have a live chat room right here on Blog Talk. So either way, come connect with us. I am now going to bring in your host, our National Medical Service Officer, Ms. Kimberly Purvis.
Howdy, howdy.
Good evening.
Good evening. Actually, should I just say evening?
Right.
They're killing me. Good God. You know, I love my job, but I hate my job at the same time.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, with doing both home health and hospice, I prefer hospice overall, believe it or not. I think it's very, it's not a morbid thing. It's a very rewarding career actually working in hospice, because you're not only are you trying to prepare your patient to die with dignity, you're preparing the family and getting them through it. Because a lot of our hospice patients, the family was just thrown into it. It's like, you know, it's different if you have, just say you have cancer, and usually you end up, you go through chemo or whatever, and you, you know what I'm saying, you progress. Either go into remission or you don't. And so you're I don't want to say you're completely prepared, but you're expecting it. And a lot, we're getting some of our home health that's transitioning over to hospice because their chronic illnesses are, you know, they're declining. And one of the new ladies that I got today, 2 days ago, she was talking and walking and eating and everything. Normal life, you know, just she's 97 years old. 2 days later, she is in bed. She can't walk. She's not eating or drinking within 2 days' time. So poor family. Her granddaughter's, is just like, you know what I'm saying? It's like thrown. She didn't even, it's not like she slowly declined. It was, bam, rapid, 2 days. And you can't even, and she sleeps about 22 hours out of a 24-hour period. If not 23 hours. I mean, she'll open her eyes occasionally and go right back to sleep. So she knows, when you call her name, she'll open her eyes sometimes and she'll, you know that you're talking to her, but other than that, so you can't do with, you're preparing the family. And so on the home health side, I got anywhere from 10 to 14 patients a day. Yes, that's overloaded and a lot. And you're going from home to home. But usually you're in and out, like 15 minutes to 30 minutes, depending on what you do. With hospice, I have 6 patients. That's a full load for hospice in an 8-hour period because, one, you got to drive from house to house, and hopefully they're within the same area. And usually there's anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour per visit. And it's like, today I had to drive 35 minutes each direction, 35 minutes there, a 45-minute visit, and 35 minutes back for one person. And I got done at 5:30. And I still had 2 people that I could not see. And I'm like, I don't care. I love my patients, but I am not working till 8 o'clock at night. It's just not happening. You know what I'm saying? And so... And then I'm get on the highway, and there's a massive – we have red flag warnings in Kansas right now because it's so dry and so windy. We haven't had any precipitation for, like, rain in 2 months. He's like, no. But it's dried up so fast. There was a massive fire, and I would say probably 4 acres of land of grass and trees is burning. And you can see it from the highway. I thought it was one of the factories, but no, it was one of the fields, and it has like a small forest, but whatever. But on the other thing I want to say, I know I rant, but who cares? If you have a family member and they're declining and they're up and responsive, and you know they're terminal, or whatever, if you decide to take them off of oxygen, and you do, and they're off of it for 13, 14 plus hours, and they're unresponsive before you took it off, then that's what happened with me this past week, and that's why I couldn't do the show Saturday. One of my patients, I saw her Friday afternoon, and by 8 o'clock at night, she was totally unresponsive. and her oxygen was already starting to tank, and her heart rate was 35. And then it shot back up to 140. But the family decided to take her off the oxygen, and so she'd been off all day long, all Saturday. 14 hours of Saturday she was off her oxygen. And the daughter called me at 6:30 that night and said, we need to take her to the hospital, and they need to give her IV antibiotics and this, that, and the other. I said, you can't. So people need to understand, once you get to a certain amount of time without enough oxygen, your brain starts to, because everything is going to go to protect your brain first. And so people need to realize that it's quality of life over quantity at the end. So enough of my little rant. You know, I just had to do it because, you know, whatever. So tonight, I know I get into these little, you know, I got a rant, but no, it's a lot for some people to think about, you know, and my kids already know. If something happens to me, don't you dare. Don't even do it. I will haunt them to the day they die.
Yep.
I don't want to be in a permanent vegetative state where you have no idea who you are, where you are, or anything. Let me die. If I'm going to be a quadriplegic, a total quadriplegic, just let me die. I don't care if I've got brainwaves. I don't care if I can talk to you. Let me die. You know what I'm saying? It says you get into an accident and you sever your spine, whatever, and they're like, well, you know, you're on a life support. No, pull me off life support. Let me die. Because I don't want to be that kind of burden. And families always, always, always say it. Oh, well, always take care of you. No, you lie. I'm sorry. Unless you're rich like Christopher Reeves was before he died, you know, he had the money. And it's reality that a lot of family does not stick around to help. They don't. And for the ones that do, become overwhelmed and, you know, and shit happens. So, anywho, so I figured tonight we're going to cover the urinary system. And I'm sure everybody knows what the urinary system is. It's your one bladder, your two kidneys, and your urethra, you know, that you pee out of. And I'm sure everybody in their lifetime has probably had either a bladder infection, a kidney infection, or a UTI, which is very unpleasant. Oh, excuse me, and or kidney stones, which those are just as unpleasant. So the urinary system, like I said, is the kidneys, the bladder, the ureters, and the urethra. And your kidneys, you know, they're on the side, but when you have a kidney infection, you should know that most of the time you have the back pain or the flank, they call it flank pain, on the side. And these organs work together primarily to create, store, and eliminate waste. Urine. In order to function properly, the human body extracts nutrients from food and uses them to produce energy and repair damage. Once all that food has been broken down and the body has retrieved what it needs, waste products stay behind in the bowel and in the blood until they are removed by the urinary system, or you poop it out. So you get rid of waste both ways. Successfully ridding the body of waste is essential to maintaining optimal health. That's the job of the urinary system. Its construction is relatively simple, but the processes that occur within it are complex and vital to health and well-being. So the principal function of the urinary system, like I said, is to move liquid and gaseous waste from the body. In order to do it, the urinary system performs three major tasks. Excretion. Excretion involves the removal of liquid and gaseous waste from the blood. Often dissolved solids are present in the blood and are also removed through excretion. That's why the kidneys are like little filters. And it goes in there and it filters out. And when you get the calcium buildup, which is AKA painful kidney stones, there's different types of kidney stones, by the way. I don't know if anybody knew that. They have kidney stones that are smooth, like little river pebbles. If you know the little river pebbles that you can chuck it and it goes flying. Or you have the type that looks like jumping jacks. And anyone from the 70s and 80s, I don't know what these are. I'm sure you see one, Bobby. Jack, you know the game? Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. You know what jacks are, right?
Yeah.
Well, they have kidney stones that look like that. And them little bastards, let me tell you something. When they tumble down through your kidneys and the little spikes will jab your kidneys, well, that particular type, they really can't go down the ureter into your bladder and to pee it out. And those are the excruciatingly painful ones because they get stuck. And that's why you end up seeing blood, is because when they start scratching the inside of the ureter and your kidneys, that's why you pee blood. But we'll get more into the kidney stones later. So secretion occurs through the production of urine. Once waste has been removed from the blood, they're released through the urine. And elimination occurs when the urine moves from the bladder to the urethra and out the body finally. Yay! Because nobody wants to hold their pee. Ask a medical provider and they will tell you their bladder is always full because you don't have time to pee. So the urinary system is comprised of two kidneys, two ureters, two sphincter muscles, and the bladder and the urethra. So each of these organs has specific functions that enables excretion, secretion, and elimination. So the kidneys are, henceforth, when you see kidney beans, your kidneys look pretty much like that. And that's why they call them kidney beans, because that's what they look like. And so they're located at the middle of the back, right under the ribcage. And they're the size of a human fist. Huh, well, that's pretty small, actually. And that removes waste from the blood to the structures as it acts as filters, or nephrons. So as blood passes through the kidney, it filters and removes waste from the urine. And that's why people who are on dialysis is because their kidneys don't function. And they have no way to eliminate the waste. And so when people are on dialysis, they lose a lot of water weight because, one, they don't pee much. Some don't pee at all. So a lot of your kidney patients have issues with going to the bathroom. And so when you're on dialysis, the whole point of dialysis is to clean the blood and get rid of all the waste. And a lot of people can lose. I've seen some dialysis patients will lose about 10 to 15 pounds of water or of, you know, water weight. And it takes a lot out of them. They're really tired after dialysis. Some people are on dialysis 3 times a week. Some are on it twice a week. Some are on it every day. I guess it depends on the stage of your kidney disease and whatnot. So your ureters, once urine forms in the kidneys, it flows through small tubes to the bladder, kind of like water hoses, but they're not that big. I wish they were that big. You can pass kidney stones faster. But no, they're like the size of, if you've seen oxygen tubing or your IV tubing, they're about that size, maybe a little bit bigger in diameter. The ureters are typically between 8 and 10 inches in length. Muscles surrounding the ureters expand and contract to help the urine flow through the bladder. When you have a UTI, you can have a UTI from the kidneys to the bladder or the bladder out. And they get irritated, and when you, like I said, when you pass a kidney stone, they could get irritated. If you cannot have lithotripsy, which is when they take the ultrasonic wave and crush the stone, and they pass through, and sometimes you might have passed a little bit of blood with your urine, and then if they can't crush it, that's when they go up and they crush it, and then they end up putting a nice little stent in. And, yeah, that has to be in there for a couple of days. Anywho, the bladder is a muscular organ that functions like a balloon. Urine from the kidney flows down to the ureter into the bladder where it's stored before it is removed from the body by way of the urethra. As the amount of urine in the bladder increases, the bladder will expand like a balloon if you were to blow air into it, or water balloon, by the way. The average bladder can hold up to 2 cups of urine for 2 to 5 hours. probably more. It depends on the size of your bladder and, you know, and the strength of your sphincters. Now, here's this thing. If you have to pee, go to the bathroom. try not to hold your urine for too long, because that's when it sets you up for UTI, bladder infections, and things like that. And also, it stretches out your bladder, and you don't really want to get, and that's when you have all the issues with your leaky bladder and that and everything else. So try and empty your bladder if you can, as often as you can, you know. Sphincter muscles, like I said, these are muscles that surround the opening of the bladder, which extends into the urethra. The sphincter muscle expands and contracts, the same thing as your rectum, no different, except one smaller than the other one. And they hold the urine in the bladder and release the urine when needed. Now, I'm sure everyone's heard of the potty dance. When you have to pee, this is for the ladies, because guys, I don't think they have this issue. You can only hold it for so long. And then the body's like, no, I have to go now. And that's when you go. And that's when you get into the other issues of urinary, like stress incontinence and things like that. Ladies, if you've had big children, big babies, you sneeze, you bend over, you cough, anything like that can cause your bladder to, you pee a little bit. Not a lot. Sometimes you pee just a little bit. So, urethra, the tube that connects the bladder to the genitals in order for the urine to pass outside the body. In men, the urethra travels to the penis, and in women, it ascends above the vaginal opening. And when the bladder becomes full, nerves and signals go to the brain to say, hey, I got to pee, go. Like I said, when your brain says go, you go, or you're running to the bathroom. So some urinary system diseases, problems with the urinary system can occur as a result of disease, injury, or aging. When the body is not able to remove waste effectively, it can build up in the body and damage various organs. Waste accrual can cause fatigue, difficulty concentrating, shortness of breath, dizziness, nausea, leg or back pain, swelling of the feet, hands, or face, and skin irritation, like itching and rashes. Urological issues are typically first discovered through blood or urine tests, and if these have abnormal results, additional exams may be necessary to find out what's wrong. The urine system are generally referred to as urodynamic exams and can include uroflow tests, post-void residual volume, cystometry, electromyography, and voiding pressure studies. And there is one that is very uncomfortable, and that's how they check you for what's it called? I'm having a brain fart right now. Sorry, guys. Like, when they test you for stress incontinence and stuff like that, they have to actually stick a little, it's a little, probably the size of IV tubing, and they will put it right up into your bladder, and there's these little things that a doctor will have to, it's to test. And I can't, for the life of me, I can't think what it is. It's very uncomfortable, and it's more pressure than anything. So, yeah, I digress. I did not like that. So for men, BPH or enlarged prostate, this is why it's important for men, have your prostate checked. I know it's uncomfortable. Nobody wants a finger up the rear end, but it's important to have your prostate checked. So this occurs only in men. See, only in men, not women, but men. And as a result of aging, the prostate, that's not only true because there is prostate cancer. So, but usually over 50, they start checking. Bobby, have you had your prostate checked yet? Bobby?
Yes, a couple times.
Oh, you have? Okay. How old are you? 50? 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever?
5.
Oh, okay. So when do they check it? Once a year? Once every 5 years?
Once every two.
Oh, OCD too. Okay.
Yeah, unless something spikes up in my blood work.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, and a lot of guys have that issue, you know, where you have to pee like 400 times a night, and they just need you possibly have a large prostate. And yes, I'm guessing it is a little uncomfortable to have it checked, but it's very important to have your prostate checked. So basically, the prostate is a walnut-sized gland that is located by the neck of the bladder. It's like a donut. And that's the reason why when it gets inflamed, it squeezes and it constricts the urethra. That's why men with an enlarged prostate, you have to pee a lot because you're not emptying your bladder completely. In the nursing home, a lot of our male patients I've had will have a catheter that stays in. Some we do a straight cast to empty their bladder out so they don't have issues. So compression can cause the urethra to narrow, in some cases close completely. So, and then if you don't urinate, guess what? Your kidneys and your adrenal glands are on top of your kidneys, which controls your blood pressure, and that's when your blood pressure can shoot up. And that's actually happened to one of my male patients. He could not urinate. And they could not get they had to use, it's called a two-day catheter, it's curved in the end, and it's mainly for men with enlarged prostate. But anyway, he couldn't do it. His blood pressure went up, he had a stroke, and he actually passed. Because he couldn't, everything is all tied together, guys. So kidney stones are a common urological condition of both men and women. Kidney stones are from when minerals and other solid substances accumulate in the kidney or along any part of the urinary tract. When they're too large, these stones can block the flow of urine from the body. From what I've read and experienced, kidney stones can go from less than 1 millimeter up. And they say that you can only really pass a 5 millimeter or smaller. Well, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? Your body can pass a 6. Because mine was 6. And mine was the little one, the jagged one that looks like Jack. And the excruciating pain you can get from kidney stones is unreal. I would shake because the pain was so bad. And so for anyone that has to endure kidney stones, God bless you. God be with you, and get strong drugs for the pain. For UTIs, everybody can get a UTI. I don't care who you are. They also occur in both men and women. UTIs can be present in any part of the urinary system, from the kidney. If you have a kidney infection, it's called pyelonephritis. The bladder, it's called cystitis. And if it's in the urethra, it's called urethritis. Or a UTI, better known as. So, and they got a picture on here. Lorna would love it. And those look really, these look like popcorn, actually. They look like kernels of popcorn, which is not pleasant. Okay, so.
What kind of pictures are we talking about?
Kidney stones.
Oh.
Yeah, because they suck. I'm telling you. In my lifetime, I've had 4 kidney stones. And I passed 3 of them. And then the last one, they asked me to go and crush it. And that's when I had, that was so much fun. Yeah, that stent they had to put in was about 8 inches long because it, and the reason why they do this is because when they take that little tiny tube and they stick it up your urethra from your bladder to your kidney, it traumatizes it, the tube, right? So once they get the kidney stone out, the reason for having the stent is because they don't want your urethra to get all inflamed. So they leave it in there for like 5 or 6 days, for it to all the inflammation to go down. But here lies the problem. Your body doesn't like objects to be in there that don't belong in there. And I made it 4 days. And I started running a fever and everything else. And I could not pee. I couldn't do anything. So the doctor's like, you know, you could have just pulled this out at home. And the look I gave the doctor was like, are you high? Because you actually have to reach, and when you start pulling it, you've got to pull it all the way out. So I had to sit in the ER for 6 hours. So the doctor takes 3 minutes to pull something out. Anywho, also for kidney infections, UTIs, bladder infections, a lot of people find relief from taking Peridium, which is prescription, or Azo, whatever it's called, Azo something. You can get that from Walmart or any drugstore. And, yes, it turns your urine orange, a nice bright orange, so don't freak out and panic. And it does work. It helps with the spasms. It helps with the inflammation, and it helps you pee better. It does help. Or you can also drink cranberry juice. If you have the onset, if you know you're getting a bladder, kidney, or UTI, sure, I mean, not everybody can, so, but try not to drink the, like the cran raisin. Try and get just the cranberry juice, not the cocktail. If you drink the cranberry cocktail, it's got all kinds of other juices in it, and that kind of takes away from the cranberry. So, anywho. So would
eating like dehydrated cranberries work for that too, or no?
I don't see why not.
That's what I would think. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's still cranberries. Any way you look at it. Hold on a second. Let me see. I'm okay. So usually, I'm sure everybody knows, fever, burning, pain, all of those are usually associated with UTIs, kidney infections, and bladder infections. You may even become nauseous because some people get nauseated from pain. If you're in excessive pain, some people get nauseated. Okay, so you said dried cranberries? I don't know. Cranberries. Oh, here we go. Help with the UTI. Oh, so, they actually have Azo cranberry. That's what's called Azo cranberry caplets, urinary tract health. Yes, you can benefit from eating dried cranberries. So, you have high doses of PAC, I'm not going to pronounce it, but they're called PAC. And that's what you get, the antioxidant that you get from cranberries. So, yes. If you don't like cranberry juice, eat cranberries. So there you go. Oh, shoot me. So, a condition characterized by a gradual loss of kidney function. Early stages can be asymptomatic. And the disease progression occurs slowly over a period of time. Usually it takes lab tests or imaging. And it can be lifelong, and it's caused due to polynephritis or polycystic kidney and medication. Symptoms include poor appetite, poor alertness, weight loss, muscle cramps, and treatments in the initial stages will aim to manage the signs and symptoms and slow the progression of the disease, and advanced stage treatments include dialysis and a kidney transplant. So, like, I have a patient who's stage 3B for chronic kidney, and she is not at dialysis yet, and she doesn't urinate much. So that would be her next step. So, and that's why there's, like, what was it, Phil? The GFR and your ammonia level, and that's some blood work that they do. So early stages will show no symptoms. When the disease progresses, symptoms are nausea, loss of appetite, fatigue, swelling of the feet and ankles, but also swelling of your feet and ankles, can also be a sign of congestive heart failure, not just chronic kidney disease. High blood pressure, need to urinate more often, especially at night, decreased mental sharpness, problems with sleep, blood in urine, protein in urine, erectile dysfunction in men, twitching of the muscles and cramps, persistent itching, chest pain if fluids build up around the lining of the heart. Shortness of breath is seen if the fluids build up in the lungs. And the reason why you would have that is because your kidney cannot push all the fluids out. So that's why you have all that, all the edema and excess fluid, because your kidneys can't pump it out. So treatment in the initial stages aims to manage the signs and symptoms and slow the progression of it. Like I said, advanced treatment includes dialysis and kidney transplant. You could be on dialysis for many, 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 many years. I've seen people on dialysis for 10-plus years. And then it gets to the point where the kidney is absolutely no good, and that's when you get a kidney transplant. And yes, you can live with one kidney. It is possible. So some of the medications that people take, they're called angiotensin-converting enzymes, or ACE inhibitors, or angiotensin II receptor blockers, and that's to treat your high blood pressure. And also statin drugs to lower your cholesterol, like atorvastatin, fluvastatin, lovastatin, pravastatin, simvastatin. Then there's also medication for anemia because of it helps produce healthy red blood cells and helps reduce fatigue and weakness. So a lot of times they become anemic. And they can also take hormone erythropoietin. I pronounced that correctly. Also, a lot of kidney patients and congestive heart failure patients are also on diuretics to reduce the swelling. And let me tell you something. If you ask anybody who's on diuretic, they hate it because it makes them pee a lot. That's the whole point, is to pee more, to get it out of your body. And it does get to the point where they're on diuretics and then they're not getting all of the urine out of their body. And so that's as it progresses. Let's see. So there are supplements you could take to protect blood vessels from damage by calcium deposits as vitamin D and calcium supplements. And then, oh, as you could tell, my dog is being retarded. Okay, hold on a second. So acute kidney failure is when your kidneys lose the ability to filter waste from your blood sufficiently. So symptoms of acute kidney injury may include little to no urine when you try to urinate. Never force, when you go to the bathroom, never force it. You're going to want to let it flow naturally. Sometimes when I have to go, I just bend over. I'm sitting with like you're tying your shoe. And that helps me go to the bathroom, you know, better. But so anyway, you have swelling, especially in your legs and feet. Not feeling like you want to eat. You have become nauseous and you could be vomiting. Feeling confused, anxious, and restless or sleepy. And pain in the back. A lot of people, I don't say a lot, let me just say that. A lot of elderly people, when they get UTIs, can get very confused. Now, it's kind of hard to differentiate if they already have dementia, you know, to differentiate, but it can actually become worse. So if you've got your average person, Bobby's walking around, la-di-da, and all of a sudden he starts having problems urinating but not really paying attention to it, and he gets a bad UTI, right? And all of a sudden Bobby acts like he has no idea what the hell's going on. And that would be a big red flag to say, hey, maybe I need to go to the doctor. And a lot of times.
That's him every day, though.
Huh?
That's him every day, though.
Well, true, I know. But like I said, you know. But you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of, when I say elderly, I mean in your 70s, 80s, 90s, and up there. There
well,
was a profound
well, like
difference.
He's about that age.
Yeah, he is about that age, 55, 80. Yeah, it's around the same thing.
155, 280.
Yeah, you know, we just go, you know, once you skip a few, 99, 100, kind of same thing. By the way, that's how my dad used to, when he would tell us, he goes, I'm counting to 100. I'm like, oh, cool. I got to tell him, he goes, one, two, skip a few, 99, 100. I'm like, what the hell? That's only four. He says, well, I skip. So, yeah. So anyway, acute kidney failure can occur when, if you have a condition that slows blood flow to your kidneys. You experience direct damage to your kidneys. Blunt force trauma to your kidneys. You could get hit with a baseball bat, a bat, a ball. You can get into a car accident. Sports, a lot of, some sports athletes. My grandfather got kicked by a horse when he was young, in his early 20s. And when the horse kicked him, it kicked one of his kidneys. And it stopped working. It damaged his kidney for life. And then when, and the strange thing is when he was in his 80s before he died, the bad kidney started working out of the blue, and his good kidney crapped the bed. And then he ended up passing from chronic kidney disease anyway. But yeah, so any type of trauma can damage your kidney. Also, if you get a bad enough kidney infection or kidney stones to block it, that can also damage your kidneys. Your kidney's urine drainage tube, your ureters, they become blocked and waste can't leave your body through your urine. Like I said, if you get a kidney stone big enough and it blocks the ureter at the bottom of the kidney, that urine has, the waste has nowhere to go. So it's going to sit there and it's going to cause pressure. And I don't know if your kidneys can rupture. I'm sure they probably could. But that's what all the waste will back up. And, you know, it's not good. So there are several treatments for kidney failure, but the type of treatment needed will vary depending on the reason for your kidney failure. Dialysis, dialysis filters, and other things like that, or a kidney transplant. And here's the thing. If you ever have to have access for any organ, you're on lifelong anti-rejection medication for the rest of your life. So, but that goes for any type of transplant. Okay, you went over kidney failure, kidney injury, dialysis. I don't know a whole lot about dialysis. I never really worked with it. I just took care of patients for home health. But it's invasive. It's minimally.
I had a patient that was on peritoneal dialysis. I mean, he did hemodialysis, you know, in the beginning, and then they got him on to peritoneal dialysis. And then, you know, sometimes they'd still have him do the hemodialysis just to see where he was at. They did that maybe once or twice a year. He was on peritoneal dialysis for years, and it doesn't really interfere in your life, especially in the beginning. He had to do it so many times a day, but as they improved the process. He only did it at night. It was really kind of cool.
Yeah, you could do it at home.
Yeah.
When we lived in New Hampshire, we lived next door to a little boy. He was this was like a bajillion years ago. But he was like 8 or 9, and he had stunted growth, and he could not go to school because he had peritoneal dialysis, and he had these huge bags. of fluid, and that's in the, and it ran through the machine, almost like hemodialysis, and he did it at home. But they had to worry about bullies.
I was about to say he can do it while going to school. I mean, because Mr. Davidson,
he was homeschooled because of bullying.
Right. Well, that's a different situation. But the process itself should not hold him back from going to school. I mean, he'd have to go into the nurse's office to do it, because it is does need to be in a somewhat sterile environment. I mean, not completely, but it does need to be somewhat sterile. So, but the bullying probably would deter him wanting to do that at school.
He was 8 or 9. He was like the height of a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And he had the cushions. He had the big puffy face and the steroids he was on. And, you know, kids are mean. They're little assholes. And this was in the 90s. No, actually, 92,
95. That's when they first started really getting into the different peritoneal dialysis was in the 90s. Late 80s, early 90s, because Mr. Jacobson started on it, I want to say, in the mid to late 80s, and he was one of the first people to have it. And, I mean, they'd ship it. Like, he still used to go fly on planes, you know, to go to meetings and everything. Or he had the summer house, so they'd deliver to both houses. And, you know, they had different weights. It was like 15, 25, 30, you know, a saline solution. Some of it, depending on certain things, because you'd have to weigh it after. So what goes out, what goes in has to come out. And you have to weigh it to make sure that it's the, you know, and you have to check the color. I mean, but you could do it. I mean, he could do it in the bathroom as long as it was a semi-sterile. I mean, you're not going to do it in a restroom in a gas station. But,
no.
It's really an interesting process. Have you worked with patients on peritoneal dialysis?
No.
I've
only taken care of a handful of patients on hemodialysis. And, but I didn't take care of them. Here's the thing. LPNs are not allowed to do OB and Ps in the hospital or dialysis.
Oh, well, I'm private. I could do whatever I wanted.
No. I mean, you couldn't actually hook them up to it, is what I'm saying.
No, I know.
I'm glad. Yeah, I could take care of them in home health for other issues. But when it came to actually doing the dialysis, and this is what's so retarded, you could be trained to do dialysis as a tech, but an LPN who's licensed to be a nurse cannot do dialysis.
That's really
weird.
And I was turned down
for a job for a dialysis tech because I had too much experience to waste my time being a dialysis tech and not being a nurse. My license had lapsed because I forgot what year it lapsed.
Yeah, the same thing. Towards the end, I had to give him heparin shots every now and then. But mostly it was into the tube, not into his body, thank God. I don't like giving people needles. So the heparin, I would put it in the tubing, because the tubing, there's the entrance port, and I would put the heparin into that so that when it flowed into him, when the liquid, the saline solution flowed into him, the heparin would go in too.
You see, I'm having a brain fart. It's the second time today this has happened. Good God. I'm sorry. shit. Okay, anywho, diabetic neuropathy is called, or kidney disease. A lot of your diabetics have diabetic neuropathy, and it's a lot of nerve problems. But I did not know this. It's a serious complication of type 1 and type 2 diabetics. It's also called diabetic kidney disease. One in three people living in the U.S. have diabetes with diabetic neuropathy. A lot. Also, all I've ever heard of diabetic neuropathy is the nerve pain in your leg to your feet. I'm not, that's the main reason why diabetics have diabetic foot ulcers. They don't know if they cut their foot and it gets infected, and that's how they start losing toes, feet, and legs. So, apparently diabetic neuropathy affects the kidney's ability to do the usual work of removing waste and extra fluid from your body. And so the best way to prevent or delay diabetic neuropathy is by maintaining a healthy lifestyle and adequately managing your diabetes and high blood pressure. Over many years, the condition slowly damages your kidneys and it won't filter anymore, or it slows them to filter. Early treatment may prevent or slow the disease's progress and reduce the chance of complications. Kidney disease may progress to kidney failure, also called end-stage kidney disease. Kidney failure is a life-threatening condition. It is, especially if you have one kidney. Now, when people have, some people, when they have kidney disease, it affects one of the kidneys. Okay? So it's not life-threatening because you can live with one kidney. But for the most part, it affects both of the kidneys. So at this stage, the treatment options are dialysis or kidney transplant, like I said. In the early stages of diabetic neuropathy, you'll most likely not notice signs or symptoms, but in the later stages, worsening of blood pressure control, protein in your urine, swelling of your ankles, feet, hands, or eyes, increased need to urinate, reduced need for insulin or diabetes medication, confusion or difficulty concentrating, shortness of breath, loss of appetite, nausea and vomiting, and persistent itching and fatigue. And that's the fatigue, I can get you the fatigue, is because, and the nausea and vomiting and stuff like that, is because your body cannot get the toxins and the waste out of your body. When to see your doctor? Oh, anytime you have a problem to urinate. Pain, fever, all of those symptoms. Yeah, go see your doctor. Chances are, depending on your insurance, of course, you have to see your PCP, and they'll have to refer you out to a urologist so they can do that. Or, if you're lucky, you could just go skip the middleman and go right to a specialty doctor. If you can, that's what I would do, because it takes forever. Now, if you're in the VA system, forget it. You've got to climb hurdles just to get to that urologist or any specialist. We've already went over how kidneys work. Over time, poorly controlled diabetes can cause damage to blood vessels, clusters in your kidneys that filter the waste from your blood. And that, like we said, it can lead to kidney damage and cause high blood pressure. And your adrenal glands, like we said over and over, control your blood pressure or help control it, and they sit on top of your kidneys. What affects one affects the other. So that's why I said always watch. And here's the thing. If you have elevated blood pressure, right, for the most part, people will feel lightheaded, dizzy, headache, feel like crap. Sometimes you can get nauseous when you have elevated high blood pressure. And I mean, when I say elevated, I mean like 160s and 70s, 180s, you know, over 100, 105. God, you feel bad. And so that's what people, a lot of times people will just wait until they feel bad. But here's the problem that I've had to learn and my doctor explained to me. Your body can get used to having high blood pressure and not have any symptoms or not even feel it. That's not good. That's why it's important to pay attention to your body when stuff is going wrong. Also for the diabetics, aside from the kidney problems and your pancreas, because it's not putting out the insulin that it needs, you can also lose your eyesight. So I have learned. I haven't seen too many diabetics that lose their eyesight. But you can. So it's very important. Take care of your blood sugar. And don't do what a lot of people do. Well, I know what the signs and symptoms are of high and low blood sugar. And check your blood sugar. Because like everything else, if you get used to it being 300, you're causing damage to your body at 300, 350, 400, you know. And if it, by the time you check it and say, hey, I'm feeling bad, it could be too late. The damage is already being done. Check your blood sugar at least once a day or when your doctor tells you, you know, because you don't want to start losing body parts or die. So if you're living with diabetes, factors that can increase your risk of diabetic neuropathy include high or low blood sugar. Actually, no, it's high blood sugar, high blood pressure, being a smoker, high cholesterol, obesity, and a family history of diabetes and kidney disease. Some complications, fluid retention, which could lead to swelling in your arms and legs, high blood pressure, or fluid in your lungs, which is pulmonary edema, the rise of potassium levels into your blood called hyperkalemia, heart and blood vessel disease, cardiovascular disease, which could lead to a stroke. And that's why you always want to watch out for high blood pressure. That's what they say at stroke level. And when I say stroke level, most doctors, not say most doctors, most people, it's 200 plus over 120 plus. Not that you couldn't have a stroke if it's lower. I'm not saying that, but that's when they say it's stroke level. It's when it's really high. Damage to the blood vessels and the light-sensitive tissue at the back of your eye, which is diabetic retinopathy. Reduced number of red blood cells to transport oxygen, which is anemia. Foot sores, erectile dysfunction, diarrhea, and other problems related to damaged nerves and blood vessels. Bone and mineral disorders due to the inability of the kidneys to maintain the right balance of calcium and phosphorus in your blood. Everything has to have a happy, as it's called, homeostasis. Has to be a happy medium in your body. It all works together. Irreversible damage to your kidneys, which is called end-stage kidney disease, eventually needing either dialysis or kidney transplant for survival. So for prevention, and this is going to be it because I've got a lot of stuff to do, so we're going to cut the show short tonight. I apologize. I forgot to say tell you that, Bobby. Surprise! keep regular appointments for diabetic management. Keep your annual appointments. For more frequent appointments, if recommended by your healthcare team, if you start having issues, yeah, well, you're going to want to go see your doctor or your specialist. Treat your diabetes. Take your insulin. If you're not on insulin yet, take your oral medications. I've heard a lot of people hate metformin. I know there's Giardian and there's glucophage and a plethora of others, but apparently no one likes metformin because they say it actually damages your kidneys, but everything runs a risk of damaging something in your body. But anyway, diet, exercise, and your medications. Manage high blood pressure. Take your medication. Low-sodium diet. Exercise. Follow instructions for over-the-counter medications. There are some medications for people with high blood pressure. There's like some of the cold medicines. It'll tell you, was it chlorocetin, HP, whatever. There's a cold medicine that is specifically made for people with high blood pressure, diabetics, and things like that. Follow your instructions on packages of non-prescription pain relievers. such as aspirin and NSAIDs like naproxen or Aleve, ibuprofen, Advil, and Motrin, they're all the same thing. For people with diabetic neuropathy, taking these type of pain relievers can lead to kidney damage. Most kidney patients are not allowed to take them, and they'll tell you that. So just watch out for that. Maintain a healthy weight if you can. And don't smoke. If you do smoke, try and cut back. So, but that could be it for your urinary system. Sorry, Bobby. I'm going to have to cut tonight short. If that's okay with everybody.
No.
Too bad.
You're good. I enjoyed it. I got to go find something for my toothache. I keep forgetting to call the dentist.
Well, actually, the only other thing that we didn't cover was bladder problems. You kind of covered all the bladder problems. I didn't realize the urinary system. But then you have other things. You got bladder cancer, kidney cancer, and things like that. I mean, but for the most part, the UTI and things like that are your biggest thing. But there's also foods to avoid with kidney and bladder and all that. But if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask, message, whatever. Don't call after 9 p.m. because I won't answer. But other than that, I'm just tired and I got a lot of paperwork to do. Sorry, guys.
Get her done.
I don't know if I'm coming or going anymore. Huh?
Get her done.
I know. It's like Saturday. I felt so bad. What was it? Oh, you did it 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, yeah, don't even count on it. And I was busy the whole entire day with that one patient. And so it was, I worked until 10 o'clock Thursday night. I worked until 10 o'clock Friday night. And then I worked all day on Saturday. So there was no way that I could have. And I had 20 plus charts to do on top of helping out with two patients. So, yeah, this is pretty chaotic. So, but anywho, next week, hold on a second, let me find it. You talked about what today was after I went show. Next week, we're going to cover the skin, and there's a lot of different issues with the skin. Besides the obvious, it's the largest organ in your body, is your skin. So, and that's all. Any questions, concerns, comments?
How do you know? I just know.
From the peanut gallery.
Reindeer really know how to fly?
I don't know. But you do know what I know?
Depends
are they going to fly?
Depends on what you're smoking.
Was there a wind? You know, funny. I had one of my guy that I had to sit with on Thursday. He asked his daughter, he's like, when's my nurse coming? She's like, I should be here soon. He's like, oh, crap, put my stuff up. And he smoked marijuana. And whatever. And so I talked to her, and of course he could barely breathe. I mean, he's not breathing very heavy, you know. And I told her, I got to let him smoke. If that helps with his pain, let him smoke. He thought we would get mad and not a lot. No, dude, go ahead. So,
well, speaking of marijuana, and I'll bring it to edibles, don't ever take them if you don't know what you're taking. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And what did you do to screw that one up?
Well, when I was cleaning Dick's house, he handed me some cookies. He couldn't eat because he had a feeding tube in. And Dick always liked to cook food and stuff. So I just took a couple chunks and threw in my mouth, and And after I put them in my mouth, he told me they were medical. And like, oh, I didn't have that much. I should be fine. Yeah, whatever. I had to leave. I thought I was going 80 miles an hour, and I was only going 40.
You could smell colors?
I know. I can't do drugs.
You are smelling colors. Okay.
I was smelling colors. Then I get home. I thought maybe I could just sleep it off, and then I couldn't fall asleep. But I couldn't open my eyes either.
Because you're old.
Oh, shit. I gotta go. I really do. One of my patients just called me. Her dad's not doing good. So
right.
I got to take care of this.
All right. Thank you for another great show.
Oh, no problem.
And God bless America. God bless our first responders, our children, veterans, and our military. And God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Table and it figured 3 minutes later.